Are you tired of hearing about polarization? It's become an article of faith that the American public is deeply divided. And it's a problem that looks like it will get worse before it gets better. But what if it's a problem that you yourself are making worse? And what if there are concrete steps you can take to improve your interactions at home, work, at school, and throughout your community? Well, there are. And here to tell you about them is Jeffrey L. Cohen, author of the new book, Belonging: The Science of Creating Connection and Bridging Divides. Jeffrey teaches psychology at Stanford University, and the techniques he recommends could not only help with political divisions, but they can also help you feel more connected to those you care about most. Here's Jeffrey.
I'm Jeffrey Cohen, author of the new book, Belonging: The Science of Creating Connection and Bridging Divides. I'm a social psychologist at Stanford University, where I teach and conduct research. I wrote this book because I think that the scientific research on belonging is not only utterly fascinating, not only revealing of what it means to be a human being, but useful. Now, the word belong actually literally means to go with. And our species, in fact, has evolved to journey through life with each other. We cannot go it alone. The need to belong, research suggests, is even coded in our DNA. Now, what is a sense of belonging? The journalist Marina Keegan described it as the opposite of loneliness, a feeling that there are an abundance of people who are in this together and are on the same team. And I love that definition. Of course, you can feel a sense of belonging in one domain, say at home, but not in another, like at work. When we feel that sense of belonging, though, in whatever domain, it's as close to a magical state as you can get in psychological research. And I don't use that term magical lightly. A sense of belonging has a wide range of benefits to our performance, our persistence, our resilience, our mental and physical health, our happiness, our ability to take on challenges, to learn, and to grow. I see that sense of belonging as a kind of psychological perch from which we can view life's difficulties with a bit more equanimity. Today, though, we live in an increasingly fractured world where so many forces divide us. Yet, there is much we can do in our day-to-day lives to create belonging, bridge divides, and make the world a little bit better, even during these challenging times. You can think of this book as a sort of driver's guide for navigating the traffic of the social world. It's filled with practical science-backed strategies for handling the wide range of sensitivities in our increasingly diverse world, and for turning what would otherwise be an interpersonal collision into an opportunity for understanding, connection, and growth. So in that spirit, here are 5 insights from the book about the importance of belonging and how you can find it and even create it in your day-to-day social life. Insight number 1 is simply that a sense of belonging matters. It matters not just in early development, as psychologists discovered in the mid-20th century. It matters throughout the lifespan, from the cradle to the grave. Of course, your smarts, grit, and passion contribute to your health and fulfillment, your success, say, at school or work. But just as important, and maybe even more important, is your sense that you belong there, that you feel at home. In one national study, first-year college students' numerical rating of agreement with a single statement, "I feel a part of my college," proved to be one of the strongest predictors of their being enrolled in college 2 years later. Think of that. A response to a single item predicted retention years later. And it was even more statistically significant than their accumulated high school records. So, if you want a school where students don't drop out, or a workplace where employees stick around, nurturing belonging may be a really good place to start. I myself can personally attest to the importance of belonging. When I was a first year, wet behind the ears assistant professor, surrounded by all these esteemed silverback scholars I had previously only read about, I felt acute doubt about whether I belonged in my profession. I'd go whole days ruminating about whether I could cut it or about whether other people thought I could cut it. Little things would loom large. A colleague would ask me a question about my research. I'd feel as if they were tearing me down when they really weren't. I'd come home from work exhausted, even though I'd accomplished almost nothing the whole day except worry. At the same time, small experiences like a stimulating conversation with a student or even just a thankful email from a colleague re-energized me, gave me confidence, and kept me in the game. My colleague, Greg Walton, and I did some research showing how seemingly trivial experiences such as these can have big effects. For example, we found that when college students were led to believe through an experimental ruse that they happened to share a birthday with a math major, their birthday fell exactly on the same day we led them to believe, these participants became more motivated in math, and they even worked harder and longer on a tough math problem. Here's one more example of how belonging matters, but in a medical context. Gregory Carter and his colleagues had postcards sent to patients who had previously been admitted for attempting suicide. The postcards simply said that the hospital staff was thinking of you and wished you well. The postcards reduced the number of suicide reattempts by half. There is great power to the message, you belong. Insight number two, a sense of belonging is shaped by situations, the lived experiences of our day-to-day lives. We in the Western world have a strong bias to think that what really matters in shaping people's thoughts, feelings, and behavior is the kind of person they are, what's inside of them. We tend to think that whether you're a loner, an introvert, an optimist, or a pessimist predicts your feelings, thoughts, and behavior, like whether you belong or not, or feel you do. And yes, while personality matters, it actually doesn't matter nearly as much as we think. Much more than we imagine, the social situation, our circumstances, and how we see them, what happens to us, here and now, in our homes, in the classroom, the boardroom, or the barroom, shapes us. Who we are depends on where we are. The situations that we create for one another and for ourselves can generate or undermine connection. Let's look at one of my favorite experiments showing this by Lee Ross and his colleagues. Imagine you're a participant in this study. You're playing a simple game with another player. There's a big pot of money, and you as the player can make one of two moves. You can either go for the grab and try to take all the money for yourself, or you can choose to share the pot with the other player. Now, most observers, when they're asked to predict what's going to affect the player's move or choice, say it's their personality, whether, say, they're a greedy SOB or a really nice person. But it turns out that what matters more is a simple aspect of the situation, the name of the game. When the experimenter offhandedly refers to the contest as the Wall Street game, 70% of people go for the grab. But if the experimenter calls the same game the community game, 70% of players decide to share. What's more, players who have a reputation as being nice or greedy respond in the same way to the name of the game. I think this study is empowering. As we go about our lives as friends, managers, teachers, parents, caregivers, even strangers out and about in the world, we have some room to maneuver, some latitude to define through our words and actions the situations we inhabit as community games, where we trust and care for one another. In one study by Michael Schwabe, for instance, when political partisans simply expressed their views by saying, "I think," beforehand, the other side was much more open and interested in what they had to say. Even long and bitter divides can be closed to a surprising degree by giving people new situations that bring them together as a community in common purpose. Lots of research shows that attempts to ameliorate conflict by changing individuals' attitudes with persuasion, those seldom work. What's the alternative? Change the situation. Give people new situations. The political scientist Salma Moussa did just this. She created a soccer league in Iraq, a country ravaged by war and genocide. Some of the teams integrated Muslim and Christian players, between whom relations were tense and scarred by distrust. At the end of the season, Musa found tensions between the players from the two ethnic groups eased considerably, and lasting friendships were formed too. For example, to take just one finding, the percentage of Muslims and Christians who played together in the off-season more than tripled relative to a control group. Insight number three. As individuals, we each have a power to create belonging out there in the world. The great truth of social psychology is that the situation is powerful, but the opposite of a great truth is also true. The individual is powerful too. Each of us, as part of the situation we are in, share some of the power of the situation. And by changing the situation through our words and deeds, we can have big effects. Here's one example from a female director of a major Silicon Valley firm that I interviewed. She was about to give a presentation to her stakeholders. It was a make or break moment. She was really nervous. She was aware that she was one of only a few rising female leaders in the industry at the time, which just dialed up her stress and doubts about belonging. As she was about to take the stage, the CEO walked up to her, looked her in the eyes, and said, "You are changing this company." There's only five words, but they sent the message that she belonged and that she could do it, and she nailed the talk. Here's experimental evidence of the power here of educators to create belonging with their students by changing a key element of the situation, the feedback that they give. We had teenage Black students, many of whom worry about their belonging in school, write an essay for their teacher. The teachers then gave each essay written critical feedback, pointing out areas of weakness and strategies for improvement. Now, for some of these essays, we added a handwritten note from the teacher that was paperclipped to the top of the essay. That note simply said, "I'm giving you this criticism because I have very high expectations and I know that you can reach them." For the kids who got this note, for these kids, the message was like water on parched soil. The percentage of students who revised their essay and tried again jumped from 17% in a control group where they didn't receive that message to 71% among those students who got that message of validation. This note even sent these students on a positive course. Years later, we found that the note increased the percentage of the students who made it to a four-year college by 30 raw percentage points. What a powerful influence teachers can have if a one-sentence note at a formative stage can have such an effect. What a powerful influence we can all have on the people that we support and care for. Insight number four, don't believe everything you think. This quip I actually got from a bumper sticker that I saw, and it distills so much of the wisdom on bias in social psychology. Just because we think, feel, or even see something does not make it true. We have an outsized faith in the value of our thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, and we fail to realize that these are often untrustworthy constructions of our own mind. The biases of the mind that psychologists have uncovered, stereotyping, confirmation bias, the tendency to blame individuals rather than situations, and many others are some of the most formidable foes to creating belonging. One way to overcome bias is simply to be aware that we're capable of it and to craft situations that keep these biases at bay. You can think of them as sort of protective guardrails in our situations. Here's one example drawn from research with my colleague Eric Ullman. We found that people, when asked to decide between a male and a female candidate for the job of police chief, they favored the male. What they did was to unconsciously shift their criteria to favor whatever credentials the man happened to have. As a result, when participants hired the male candidate for the job, they thought that they had hired the right man for the job when in fact they had created the right job criteria for the man. We found that a simple situational hack eliminated gender discrimination. Have people commit to their hiring criteria in advance of reviewing job applicants and their credentials. So, although we can't always trust our minds, by being aware of this fact, we can better craft situations that foil our biases and create inclusive settings for all. Insight number 5, prospective get. To prospective get refers to the act of asking for, getting people's perspective rather than assuming we know it. It's a term coined by the social psychologist Nick Epley and his colleagues. Rather than try to imagine or take the perspective of another human being, get it by asking questions. When we try to take the perspective of others, even of close friends, we are much less accurate than we think. And that's true even for romantic couples. We end up not knowing each other and not knowing that we don't know each other. And as a result, we don't get to know each other as much as we could. We don't establish that authentic basis of connection, being seen and being known for who we are. The solution is blazingly simple. Ask them good questions and listen to the answers. Perspective get. Even though it's simple, it's very hard to do in the rush of everyday life. And we're so overconfident in our ability to read people that we don't even think we need to perspective get as much as we actually do. Now, one benefit of perspective getting is that you convey to people that you are genuinely curious about who they are. And this act of curiosity fortifies their sense of belonging, helping people to feel at home and to perform to their potential. In one experiment by my colleagues and me, when teachers, these were middle school teachers, took the time over the course of the year to ask ethnic minority teenagers about their most important values, these were students in their class, what their students cared for, what brought them joy, the students responded by earning higher grades compared with students in a control group, asked about some neutral topic. What's more, feeling that they then belonged in school, feeling like they were seen, these students went on to earn better grades over the next 2 years of middle school. And this then set them on a better academic path. Years later, we found, to our surprise actually, that the percentage of students who made it to a four-year college as a result of this exercise in perspective getting increased by 20 raw percentage points. Perspective getting can even help to bridge the partisan divide roiling our country. Even in the smallest corners of social life, we can look for opportunities to conjure some of the magic of belonging. Community, I really believe, can be found and created in the most unlikely places. We can all change the world in our small ways. We can shape situations to make them less threatening and more welcoming, allowing people from all walks of life to feel that they belong and to thrive. Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed the book.
Thank you, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey L. Cohen with 5 big ideas from Belonging, The Science of Creating Connection and Bridging Divides. For some related ideas, listen to our book bite for Connect, Building Exceptional Relationships with Family, Friends, and Colleagues. I'm Holly Morris. Thanks for listening.